the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider at this halfway mark of August. August might be the eighth month of the year for most people, but for Italians, it's the month of the year. It's the month of Ferragosto, the August holidays. It's time for a good long vacation, time to go to one's second home in the mountains or at the seashore, and time for most anything you can name to close for a bit. Stores, pharmacies, dry cleaners, many coffee bars and restaurants, shoe repair places, movie theaters. You got the idea. In place of an interview segment this week, I've prepared a special that I call the Lazy Hazy Days of August in Rome. I think you'll get a kick out of it and learn a few things as well. For example, how did ancient Romans deal with the hot weather of August? So stay tuned for that after the news and a Q&A. Now here are the top news stories of the week. Sunday, August 10th. Addressing the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square for the Sunday Angelus, Pope Leo reflected on the gospel passage from Luke, inviting the faithful to ask themselves how they are investing the, quote, treasure of their lives. Quoting Jesus' words, "Sell what you own and give alms," he urged Christians not to cling to the gifts they've received from God, but to use them generously for the good of others, especially those most in need. "It's not only about sharing material possessions," he said, "but about putting into play our abilities, our time, our affection, our presence, our empathy. Each person," Leo continued, "is a unique, priceless good in God's plan, a living, beating capital that must be cultivated and invested. Otherwise, it dries up and loses its value." Leo did warn that this treasure can be squandered or even taken by those who, like a thief, turn it into an object of consumption. After praying the Angelus, the Holy Father made a heartfelt appeal to international decision makers to take responsibility for seeking solutions to conflicts. He expressed satisfaction over the new peace deal between Armenia and Azerbaijan, but also expressed deep sorrow for the violence that continues to devastate Haiti. Leo XIV said war must be rejected as a means of resolving conflicts. The Pope called on leaders to take responsibility and work actively toward peace, a goal he urged the faithful never to stop praying for. Monday, August 11th, the Vatican published a document in which Pope Leo expanded rights for parents working in the Vatican. A rescript signed by the Prefect of the Secretariat for the Economy and approved by the Holy Father introduced several new measures regarding paternity leave, the rights of parents with children who are incapacitated or have a severe disability, and the granting of family allowances. 5 days paid leave for Vatican employees on the birth of a child, 3 paid days each month for parents of disabled children. For families with children in a situation of certified severity, it's established that the parents alternately are entitled each month to 3 days of paid leave, which may also be taken consecutively, provided the child is not fully hospitalized in specialized institutions. Tuesday, August 12th, the Vatican Press Office announced that due to the high temperature forecast, the general audience on Wednesday, August 13th, will be held in the Paul VI Hall. Afterwards, the Holy Father will go to St. Peter's Basilica to greet those who could not find a place in the hall. The weekly papal audience open to the public will also be broadcast on the giant screens set up in St. Peter's Square. Wednesday, August 13th. In fact, the general audience took place in the air-conditioned Paul VI Hall, but afterwards, the Pope managed to greet pilgrims in St. Peter's Basilica, as well as those outside the Paul VI Hall in the adjacent parking area. "We continue our reflection on Jesus' passion, death, and resurrection," Leo said, "by considering Jesus' revelation at the Last Supper that one of his disciples will betray him. Despite the seeming harshness Jesus' words are not meant to condemn or humiliate his betrayer. They are rather the truth spoken with profound love, compassion, and sorrow. When we reflect honestly on our own life, the question of the apostles becomes our own. Is it me? Asking this question opens a space for truth in our hearts. Despite our faults, our hope consists nonetheless in the fact that even if we fail him, he will never fail us. If we betray him, he will never betray us. Let us allow ourselves then to be touched by his forgiving love so that we may truly be reborn as his beloved children. Wednesday afternoon, just a little after 4:30, Pope Leo left Vatican City for Castel Gandolfo, his second visit in a month to the summer papal residence. He was originally scheduled to be in this Roman hill town, home to popes for centuries, for the three-day Ferragosto weekend, August 15, 16, and 17. Ferragosto, referring to the August Feast of the Assumption. Leo's time is thus extended, starting Wednesday the 13th, and ending with a projected return to the Vatican on Tuesday, August 19. Vatican News reported that, along with the faithful who greeted the Pope on his arrival, Leo XIV answered several questions from the media, highlighting ceasefire talks for Ukraine, a resolution of the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, and the release of Israeli hostages. Asked what he expects from the upcoming August 15 summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin, Leo said, "We must always seek a ceasefire. The violence, the many deaths must stop. Let's see how they can come to an agreement, because after all this time, what is the purpose of war? We must always seek dialogue, diplomatic efforts, not violence, not weapons." When asked if he's concerned about the possibility of the population of Gaza being deported, the Pope said, "Very much concerned. The humanitarian crisis must be resolved. We cannot go on like this. We know the violence of terrorism, and we honor the many who have died, as well as the hostages. They must be freed. But we must also think of the many who are dying of hunger." Thursday, August 14th. In a message to participants in the Peruvian Church's Social Week, Pope Leo XIV recalled the love the saints bore for the image of God in all people, and he urged those who work for social justice to avoid turning to violence or sinning against charity. The Church in Peru holds its Social Week in Lima on August 14 to 16, and it brings together Catholics to dialogue in search of responses to the country's complex social issues. The papal message was read out in Spanish on Thursday. Friday, August 15th, Ferragosto, Feast of the Assumption of Mary. Pope Leo celebrated Mass at 10 a.m. in the Church of San Tommaso on the main square of Castel Gandolfo. In his homily, he marveled at how Mary's yes, her song, Magnificat, strengthens the hope of the humble, the hungry, the faithful servants of God. In Mary of Nazareth, we recognize our own history, the history of the Church, immersed in the common lot of humanity. By taking flesh in her, the God of life and freedom conquered death. The Pope recalled that on this solemnity, we contemplate how God overcomes death, yet never without us. His is the kingdom, but ours is the yes to his love that can change everything. In our day, we are like Mary whenever we do not flee, whenever we make Jesus' yes our own. That yes, Pope Leo said, still lives and resists death in the martyrs of our time, in witnesses of faith and justice, of gentleness and peace. Thus, this day of joy becomes also a day that calls us to choose how and for whom we shall live. Later at the Angelus, the Holy Father quoted a Vatican Council II document, the Dogmatic Constitution of the Church, Lumen Gentium, referring to number 68, calling it a marvelous text on the Virgin Mary, part of which I would like to read to you today as we celebrate the solemnity of her assumption to the glory of heaven. At the end of the document on the Church, the Council says, quote, "The Mother of Jesus, in the glory that she possesses in body and soul in heaven, is the image and beginning of the Church as it is to be perfected in the world to come. Likewise, she shines forth on earth until the day of the Lord shall come, a sign of certain hope and comfort to the pilgrim people of God. Mary, whom the risen Christ carried body and soul into the glory, shines as an icon of hope for her pilgrim children throughout history. Well, those are the news highlights of the week, and now stay here for a brief Q&A, and then my special on the lazy, hazy summer days of August in Rome. Welcome to this week's Q&A. The question is, what are ex votos, or votive offerings? Our Sunday Visitor's Catholic Encyclopedia says, quote, votive offerings, from the Latin votum, means a wish or a vow, and these are free will offerings of money or goods presented as an expression of piety and devotion in light of a particular request or need. On occasion, in building or renovating a church, ex votos were major artworks, artifacts, or sacred vessels given to signify the need of the donor. Votive offerings are also the payments we make when we light a candle in a church to express a prayer intention. You've probably seen many ex votos without knowing what they were. You'll find them more often in a shrine, but there may be some in your home parish. Usually made in silver, they come in a wide variety of shapes, most frequently a heart with a flame, and three letters, PGR, per grazie ricevute, for favors received. These votive offerings frequently have something to do with what is considered to be a healing or a cure, a crutch, a piece of clothing from the person, baby clothes are numerous, a medical instrument, etc. Often the shape refers to a part of the body that the faithful consider to have had a miraculous cure, a silver ex voto in the shape, for example, of a leg, an arm, a head. An ex voto can also be a letter or some other form of missive. You can even see on occasion sports uniforms, parts of bikes or cars, tennis rackets, deflated soccer balls, some object associated with the patient's personal life. There is no end to the imagination when it comes to votive offerings. And if you're ever in Italy, go to the shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, and you will see ex votos like no others, in size, shape, and quantity. Also, by the way, a beautiful place to visit and attend Mass. It took a while to build, but the shrine was dedicated in 1891.
The Mother of God, for help bearing witness to the gift of life with the National Life Rosary. Designed exclusively for EWTN, the unique centerpiece and crucifix represent the reality that all life is sacred and begins at conception. Help build a culture of life with the National Life Rosary. Available now at EWTNRC.com. EWTN is the Global Catholic Network.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with a gospel message. EWTN broadcasts the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass live every day, plus the Daily Rosary with Mother Angelica and Father Benedict Groeschel. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Hi, I'm Doug Keck. This is an EWTN Bookmark Brief. I'm speaking with author Monsignor Charles Pope about his latest book, The Hell There Is, an exploration of an often rejected doctrine of the Church, published by TAN, naturally available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com, for all things Catholic. Why is it important for we as Catholics, we as Christians, to understand that there is a hell, and there is a choice, and there is a judgment?
To maintain a sense of urgency, not panic, but an urgency that says, I got to work hard. I got to go to confession more frequently. I got to stay with the sacraments and with Mass. And I have to really care about how I raise my kids and what I'm teaching them and what I need to do when they stray. And that these things ultimately can affect where they'll spend eternity. And that's very absent in the Church today.
Monsignor Pope, his book, The Hell There Is, an exploration of an often rejected doctrine of the Church. We need to understand it better. It's available through our catalog. I'm Doug Keck. This has been a Bookmark Brief. Thanks for stopping by. We'll catch you next time.
Ever wonder how we should pray? I'd like to offer just one. Don't make prayer your work. Make work your prayer. In other words, one's faithfulness to their daily duties of state and life and vocation, while at home and at their place of employment, can be offered as a pleasing sacrifice to God when done lovingly, faithfully, and well. It all boils down to the virtue of diligence, doesn't it? Do what you're supposed to do, when you're supposed to do it, in the way it's supposed to be done.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome to a special I've prepared for Vatican Insider called The Lazy, Hazy Summer Days of Ferragosto. This is all about life in Italy in August. Friday, August 15th, Italy celebrated the biggest holiday of the summer season, Ferragosto, the name Italians give to the August 15th Solemnity of the Assumption. Ferragosto refers to the Ferie Augusti, meaning the holidays of August. For many Italians, however, this is really the biggest holiday of the year. Now, those days, the holidays of August, appear to have originated in 18 BC, when the Roman Emperor Augustus declared that the entire month of August would be dedicated to the Ferie, a series of festivals and celebrations, the most important of which fell on the 13th and was dedicated to the goddess Diana. Though the term Ferragosto is pagan in origin, in Italy it refers to the midsummer holidays but is interchangeable with the feast of the Assunta, the Assumption, strictly a religious celebration. There has been a constant tradition in the Church that Mary was assumed into heaven, and as early as the 5th century, this feast was celebrated in Syria, spreading to other parts of the world over the centuries. In the 12th century, this feast was celebrated in the city of Rome and in France. From the 13th century onwards, this was a certain tenet of faith, and in 1950, Pope Pius XII declared this dogma infallibly an ex cathedra. Now, the pace of life is much slower in Rome in July and August, particularly August, and you'll see a lot of chiuso per ferie, closed for vacation signs, posted on the shutters of stores, pharmacies, florists, some restaurants and coffee bars, newsstands, tobacconists, hardware stores, movie theaters, etc. The phones of friends, including many who work in the Roman Curia, ring empty. The peace and quiet of Rome, due to shuttered stores and greatly reduced traffic, is simply marvelous. It seems like you could shoot a cannon down the middle of some of the city's main streets and not hit a thing. The souvenir stores and mini markets that dot every street in Rome will be open for business as usual. The markets open about 7 in the morning and often in the summer close on or around midnight. Life is extra quiet in the Vatican as well. The Vatican stores, pharmacy, and medical center all have reduced hours because many employees are away on prolonged vacations. Curial activity slows down in the summer and completely stops on August 14, 15, and 16, all of which are holidays. Until the summer of 2013, popes generally spent all or much of the summer period at Castel Gandolfo. St. John Paul and Benedict XVI often even spent some time in July in northern Italy at a vacation home belonging to a diocese or diocesan seminary. Long walks in the woods, picnics, some downtime for reading, and, in the case of Benedict, quiet time to play the piano and cooler temperatures marked those periods. As you know, Pope Francis never took a vacation or went to Castel Gandolfo, although he had a reduced working schedule, usually in July. However, Pope Leo has already shown great affection for Castel Gandolfo, and he spent 16 days there in July and is there this Ferragosto weekend. The townspeople are thrilled beyond telling, as this beautiful hill town overlooking Lake Albano had almost become a deserted village with greatly reduced numbers of visitors. Now back to the Vatican. Vacations for Vatican employees are quite generous in the summer, at Christmas and at Easter, for employees of Vatican City State or the Roman Curia. Employees who live outside of Italy receive an added 3 days of vacation for travel time, and those who live outside of continental Europe receive 5 additional days. These vacations usually compensate for working 6 days a week for the rest of the year, which makes weekend travel anywhere generally impossible. Now, life in August in recent decades has vastly improved over the early years I lived in Italy, especially when there were very few supermarkets. Once upon a time, Italians bought most of their food at three places: the local alimentari, a kind of delicatessen, the neighborhood butcher, and the local fruit and vegetable store. Now, each one of those was assigned a letter, either A or B, for summer vacations. When A stores closed, B could not, and vice versa. This was to avoid all stores in one neighborhood closing at the same time, forcing people to go long distances for food. Now, of course, we have supermarkets. I can also remember when the local newspapers actually published the names of the few doctors, including specialists, who were available in Rome at vacation time. They also published a list of the few pharmacies that would be open in a given period. Today, of course, we can research doctors and pharmacies on the internet. Years ago, many coffee bars and restaurants closed for an entire month in the summer, especially because so few had air conditioning. Since the historically hot and brutal summer of 2003, that was four nonstop months of record heat ending in mid-September, more and more stores, bars, and restaurants have installed air conditioning. Over 10,000 people died in France that summer, and approximately 1,000 died in Italy. You really have to spend an August in Rome, especially before and after Ferragosto, to understand its impact. How life here at that time of year is totally different from anything we'd know or have experienced in the U.S. How can a major city become almost a ghost city? On the negative side, August is the month, especially the mid-month Ferragosto holidays, that you do not want to have any kind of an emergency, plumbing, electrical, or, as I have experienced, a dental issue. Reduced staffing and large numbers of medical staff on vacation mean you can wait an interminably long time to solve an issue. For severe medical problems, of course, there are hospitals and emergency rooms and doctors available somewhere. Aside from the heat that can take your breath away, I love August in Rome. The streets are almost empty, fewer cars mean fewer horns honking, and at times it seems there are even fewer ambulances with sirens blasting away. I love that there are fewer motorbikes. I've never had a car here. I walk, take a bus, or when needed, hail a taxi. As far as buses go in August, there are a lot more seats available. Now, let me close this special on a fun note. Patrick Brown, a writer for the local website, a few years back wrote an account of how the ancient Romans dealt with the heat. The Romans were no stranger to the summer heat, he wrote. In fact, the modern term, the dog days of summer, actually comes from the Latin dies canicula, the Roman term used to describe the stuffy, hot period of weather between July and mid-August. He said the name comes from the fact that Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S, the dog star, rises with the sun at this time of year. Romans thought this was the reason for the increase in temperature. Now, while they might not have been experts in meteorology, the Romans did have a few practical ways of coping with the heat wave. So what advice can they give us? Well, Patrick had five suggestions. He said, go to the frigidarium. The frigidarium was a large, cold pool at the Roman baths where Romans went to cool down. The waters of the frigidarium were kept chilly in the summer months thanks to the addition of snow and ice that had been imported from the Alps. Suggestion number two, leave work early. When in Rome, leave work early. Well, the ancient Romans did not do a 9-to-5 day. In fact, the average Roman only had a 6-hour workday, toiling from sunrise until noon. This stopped them from having to labor during the hottest part of the day and left them with plenty of time to go to and sit in the frigidarium with their friends. Tip number three, eat snow. granita, a delicious way to keep cool. Before gelato was invented, Romans hoping for a cool snack had to use what nature offered them. While the rich patricians and Roman nobility would often have huge stores of imported snow at home to keep them cool, citizens had to visit the snow shop. There, mountain ice was kept in underground pits and could sell for more money than wine. Tip number four, turn on the air conditioning. Air conditioning in ancient Rome, yep. The Romans were master architects, and they kept their homes cool during the summer months by employing a series of architectural tricks that provided ancient forms of air conditioning. For example, some rich residents pumped cold water through the walls of their home to freshen their dwellings during the summer months. Obviously, this was only for a select few, and the average Roman homes, called insulae, were probably very stuffy indeed. Tip number five, leave the city. Many wealthy Romans escaped the heat of the summer months by going to their country houses in the hills outside Rome. With its restricted airflow and masses of heat-storing marble, ancient Rome was a furnace in the summer, and the city's wealthy patricians were fully aware of what is known today as the urban heat island effect, meaning cities often feel hotter than they are. Urban centers are 1 to 3 degrees Celsius hotter during the day than the surrounding countryside, while at night, the difference can be as much as 12 degrees. That's the difference between a good night's sleep and a sweaty night tossing and turning. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this special on the lazy, hazy days of Ferragosto. I also hope that wherever you are to celebrate August 15th, the Feast of the Assumption, that you have a happy, healthy, holy day. God sit on your shoulder.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.